Hola, welcome to Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes, a bilingual podcast that shares interviews with self-made millionaires, financially savvy investors, and all things financial literacy and dinero. Your host, Natalie Torres, is a two-time TEDx speaker, an award-winning author, investor, and financially savvy Latina that has been featured on NBC, Telemundo, and Forbes as a financial literacy and mental health advocate. She is joined by her co-host, Vera Eagley, an author, investor, and seasoned insurance professional. Hello, hello. Welcome to Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes. Today's episode is a little of our untraditional. It's because Vera is always busy. I love it. She's doing great things at another event right now. But of course, we had some great ideas, some insights, and one of our last interviewees is joining us as an interviewee today, Ms. Betsaida Herrera. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I wanted to bring her on as well because her concept was just so wonderful in her interview. We're talking about higher education and then just women that are first in their family, first generation. We got immigrant family stories. We got the Latina, the first Latinas and everything. And so there's so much that we all have in common. Dr. Amir Estrada is someone who is, I've known for, I want to say almost 16, 17 years. I haven't made the total math, but it lets us know how long it's been. And her journey, which I'll have her talk a little bit more about. I get an opportunity to call her my friend, but she is an incredible professor at ASU. She's a two-time author. I'm sure many more to come. And the fact that she is not only bilingual, she's Mexican as well, American. She's basically those women that you're just like, I want to be like her because she's part of that less than 1% of Latinas that have a doctorate as well. She's one of those people that are constantly breaking barriers, speaking up for other people. And I mean, her books alone, the last one that I recommend, if you haven't bought any of them, but The Heart of Mentorship, just wonderful. And I'm writing it down. Yeah, it's just something everyone should have. And it's not just a class you need to take. So that's a long introduction because you mean that much to me. So welcome, Amir. Thank you for being here.
Muchas gracias. Thank you so much for the invitation and the opportunity to talk about my work and anything else that you want to talk about.
Yes. Well, and I'm going to refer to you as Dr. Estrada, excuse me, because you know, when your friends, even your friends are like, don't call me that, but this is the podcast that we have. So let's just get right into it. Can you share a little bit about your financial journey, you know, not just as an investor, but just your journey, because I know so many people will be so inspired by it.
Natalie, I actually write about you in my book, in the book that you just mentioned, The Heart of Mentorship. And I printed out the page. So it's on page 112 that I write about you because you have been very instrumental in my financial journey. It's something that I actually never really thought about, you know, in detail. I think when we met, I was at my lowest financially. I was finishing my PhD program. And like most PhD students, I wasn't making a lot of money. I had gone through a divorce and I had a little baby. So I had my daughter that was maybe like 6 or 5 at the time. And it was just a very difficult time for me. I wasn't sure if I was going to have a job after graduating. And I remember that, and I write about this in the book because we talk about mentors and how mentors look very different. Mentors could be people that, you know, you meet at in your PhD programs for many years, or mentors could be someone that you meet at a coffee shop and they just shake you up. And, you know, what resonated when meeting you was that you didn't have pity on me. You didn't say, pobrecita, like, I know it's hard. You were like, so what do you want? What do you want to do? And I was like, I want to feel bad about myself for a little bit. And you were like, well, get an envelope, track your spending. And I still remember where we were. I think you were moving at the time and we were helping you pack, and I still remember we're in a gas station, and you said, take an envelope, you know, start tracking your spending. And that made me feel so empowered. I'm like, yes, I can, baby steps. Let me get a track of my finances. And so that was my first time I started thinking about my finances in a very serious way, because I didn't have anything, because I was in los números rojos, you know, like in the red.
In the red, yes.
In the red. And I was thinking, like, this is not the time to think about financing and budgeting. I have nothing to budget. And then I graduated and I had my dream job. I had a job. I applied for one job at UConn, University of Connecticut, and I got the job. And that's unheard of. You apply for one job and you get a job at a tenure track. And I just felt that all my sacrifice was worth it. It was going to be a change for my daughter and myself. I accepted the job. And I think I shared the news with you and we celebrated. And then my ex-husband changed his mind about, you know, our child custody. So I had to decline to the position. declined to the position. And overnight, I had a PhD. I had no job and I was unemployed. And that was my story for 2 years. I was adjuncting at different universities in Southern California. And I think that's where our friendship really developed more. I know, I'm every time I talk about this.
Because those that are watching, it's because I love her and I remember that. I remember those conversations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm trying to hold back my tears, but every time I talk about this part of the story.
I'm the Llorona, so you're okay.
Yeah, and but it was just a difficult period, a difficult season in my life. And I want to read to you the section that is it okay? Okay?
Yes, please.
So it's just a small paragraph. So I'll read this to you, to both of you. Today, I call this period of my life my real life postdoc, a period of my life that was harsh yet transformative. The numbness that I felt at the coffee house as I sent that email gradually turned into anger. I was at a coffee shop, the same coffee shop where I finished my dissertation. I was then emailing UConn a letter of resignation saying, I can't relocate. And so as I sent that email gradually turned into anger, fueling my desire for a comeback. But I was full of insecurities and doubt. And doubt I would ever have another opportunity for a tenure track position. Still, I continued attending local conferences like the Pacific Sociological Association and seeking meaningful connections. I blocked out time to write on the days I did not have my daughter with me. After several unsuccessful job application attempts, I started looking for other opportunities to earn money and support my daughter and myself. During one of my writing sessions at a coffee house, Yentuyagua, I met and later became friends with Natalie Torres Haddad. Natalie is passionate about educating the Latinx community about the importance of personal finances. Her books, her podcasts, and even her TED Talks focus on empowering communities of color in all money and mental health related issues. Soon after meeting her, I started learning about personal finances and I continue. So if you want to learn more, I
read them.
But I wanted to make sure that I gave you a shout out in the book because as I was reflecting again about mentorship and what that looks like for my life, educationally, you know, I've had the best mentors. And this book was inspired by our mentor, Pierrette Jandinho-Sotelo. But financially, you just been an instrumental and beautiful person in my life for that. So that's just the intro of how I became financially savvy, if I want to call myself that.
Trust me, you are. She's an investor. She's got a 10-year track position. And yes, you are beyond. You're in that 1% tile that we've been talking a lot about.
Thank you. Yeah, so I know we haven't had a chance to catch up in a long time, but a lot has happened. And I also read about this in the book. It was just a very beautiful opportunity to reflect on this part of my life. But what I say here in the pages that follow is that I wanted the tenure track. I wanted to get tenured, right? So for those of you that may not understand, like you have 6 years or 5 years to prove yourself and get, job security, right? Otherwise they let you go. In 6 years, if you don't publish the book or meet certain criteria, you can get let go. So I thought, what if I don't get the job, right? What if I don't get tenured? So I said, well, if I don't get tenured, then I'm going to buy enough properties so that if I don't get tenured, I will be okay. Like I know what it is to be in the red. I don't want that to be my life again. So then I started, saving my money, investing and buying properties. I bought my first one 6 months after I moved here. And then 6 months later, I bought the second one. And then again, I married a wonderful man and together we bought two properties together. So we've been trying to build our, retirement and also the future that I want to leave my kids a better future than what I was given. So thank you, Natalie, for inspiring that and also for teaching me to see opportunities beyond the, the stressors of everyday life. And sometimes we think that we don't have and out for the problems that we face. So muchas gracias for all of us.
Dr. Shada, thank you. I think we share that same opinion with Natalie. She is actually one of my mentors and I met her when I moved to LA 2 months ago. And you're right. I think I, being younger, I never felt like she looked at me like, you don't know this and you don't know that. And I, the first few meetings, I had a list of questions for her. And I'm like, how do you do this? And how do you do that? So I love that you wrote a book about mentorship, because I feel like as a fellow Latina, being the first one to navigate all of this, I remember, I feel like Natalie is an answered prayer, because I remember a year ago graduating from grad school, having to restart my career, moving to a different city. You know, you look around and I'm like, I need a mentor who could walk me through the next phase of life. Like, how do I invest? Like we bought a house and we sold it and we saw what that does, right? So it's like, how do we keep doing more of this? So I think I see Natalie in the same lens of like, wow, there's certain people who naturally have that as a gift. But one of the questions that I had is, when you are in that negative state, you talk about being in the red, right? And when you talk about saving and having an envelope, like I could imagine that's very tactical. But how were you actually saving, right? How were you, you know, you hear like, don't buy the coffee, you know, put that in a savings account. Like, what does it mean when you're literally starting from scratch? Like, as somebody that graduated from business school, I've had to restart my savings. I've had to like restart what it means to like have a emergency fund, right? But I feel like sometimes it's really hard to be like, the only piece is like, how do you start when you're literally on the negatives?
So I'm not a financial coach. Okay. So listen to Natalie for her advice.
It's all educational here.
Yes. But this is what I did when I started tracking my finances, and I noticed that I actually had more than I thought I had. Right. And so that was the first epiphany. The second was, well, how bad in the red am I? Again, sometimes when you've gone through a divorce, you have a car that you can't afford. I was left with a car that I couldn't afford. And you have this victim mentality. I did. I was like, how am I going to raise my daughter? How am I going to pay for all these expenses? I moved back to my mom's house. She lived in a one-bedroom apartment in Long Beach. And for me, I just had the feeling of being a failure. I'm like, I have a PhD. I can't even afford my own place. And I remember, like, we had a little corner desk in my computer back when they were not, oh my gosh, how old
not
was
laptop. Yeah, we know how old we are. We're in our 40s. It's okay.
It wasn't that long ago. I did have a laptop, but I don't know why I had a desktop. And I'm like, let me open an Excel sheet, right? So let me open an Excel sheet, and I tracked all of my debt. How much do I owe? And Natalie was like, you have several options how to tackle your debt, snowball, or, you know, pay the highest interest, or, you know, decide what you feel comfortable. I think what you recommended, I could be remembering wrong, was snowball, but I put everything down and I put the interest rates, and I was like, okay, this is where I am. This is how much I'm making. I think the first year after grad school that I did my taxes, I reported like $10,000. And this wonderful friend that used to help us with our taxes, he's someone from Don Arturo Reyes from our hometown. He was like, it's okay, mija, no te voy a cobrar. Like he was like, I'm not going to charge you. Like, thank you. Like, I don't think I can afford you. Again, what is your reality, right? And also, how much do you really have, and tracking your spending? And I became so obsessed with getting out of debt. I became so obsessed. So I had at the time, it was a new Honda. And for me, it was a car that I couldn't afford. So I went to the Honda dealership and I said, I would like to return this Honda that I cannot afford. I was told, advised, file for bankruptcy. And I'm like, okay, I don't know if this is controversial. I said, I will not be in this situation for the rest of my life. I will not be broke for the rest of my life. And I don't want in 2 years, and I don't know if this is real or not, I don't want in 2 years or 3 years for someone to decline something.
It stays on your record for 7 years.
7 years.
I don't want someone to say, you can't rent an apartment, or you can't buy a car, or you can't buy a house because you have a bankruptcy. And for that, be a reminder of my divorce, right? And I said, no, I am not filing for bankruptcy. I am returning this car. How much do I owe you guys? And we negotiated. I think I paid $1,000 or $2,000. I got off really easily. I think I returned the car, and then I was in the parking lot. I'm like, how am I getting home? And then I started riding my bike. So I was the only grad student. They had a baby seat in the car and in the bike, because I would drive my daughter to her daycare. And, when it was raining, we have beautiful weather in California, but sometimes it rains, and sometimes it would rain. And I would tell my daughter, like, oh, isn't this fun? You know, like an adventure. And then I would drop her off, make sure that she was, you know, healthy and safe. And then I would take the metro, go to USC, park my bike. Again, it looked so funny. I should have taken a picture of this, but my car, my bike was the only one that had a baby
car seat. Yeah.
Baby car seat and baby
seats.
Bike seats?
Yeah.
Bike seat. And then later I bought a car that is, Natalie, I don't know if you introduced me to the person that sold me the car. I don't remember, but I met someone that sold me a cheap Toyota. I think I paid $6,000. I paid cash. I saved money. And I drove that car for many years until my second year of once I was already here at ASU. I had my old car and I said, I'm not buying a new car until my assets can pay for it. So that was my orgullo for myself. I'm like, and everybody would tell me like, ya eres doctora, ya, you know, you're a doctor, you have a tenure track job, like you should look the part. And I'm like, it's okay. I can park far away. And I remember having those meetings where, you know, there's valet parking. And I'm like, oh, it's okay. I took an Uber. Because my car, it was, I remember when I would pick up my daughter's friends from school and it didn't have automatic windows. You had to like roll the windows down. That's how old it was. And some of the girls would be like, how do you open the windows? And I'm like, oh, my car is so cool. It's vintage. So we call it the vintage car. And I have so much love for that car because it allowed me to save so much money. And it was my first car that I bought with my money. I made that decision to buy that car, right? When I was married, I think we bought a total of 7 cars that I never selected. I never chose, you know, those decisions were made for me with my credit because I've always had great credit. I'm in the 840s. Thank you very much.
Okay.
We're in the club.
Yes. And when I got divorced, I was in the 640s. It was really, really bad. So, Bethsaida?
Yes.
Bethsaida. So I guess to recap your question, it was a matter of recognizing my reality. I was really had more money than I thought, or I was more tracking my spending with the envelope, make it really simple. You don't need fancy apps, and surrounding myself with people that could see the potential, right? Either because they've been there and would not shame you. Like how, why, you know, no. I started reading a lot. I remember Natalie took me to in Pasadena. All the books that they recommended, I took notes on the books and I didn't have money to buy the books. So I went to the library and I got the...
I think I gave you some of my first copies. Jean Chasky, I love you. I got to meet her and I gave you her book. I had to chime in because I met the author that I adored for years. So Amir read it. I'm trying to think which one of her books. Oh my gosh, you read tons.
Yes. So one of the first ones that I think you recommended was The Richest Man of Babylon. So I've given that to so many people and a lot of my students. And I also talk about this in the book because I don't think a lot of people are open to being mentored around money. And I have to be careful when I try to give it, not advice, because I never give advice. I'm not a professional, but I do that through sharing my story and inspire people what's possible. And then I give the book. I'm like, then you do your own study, right? And if you have more questions, I can direct you. I've sent you some people. I don't know if they reached out, but or I can answer, you know, basic questions. But I'm also very, you know, transparent that that's not my field, right? And yeah, little by little, and keep, don't give up.
Yes.
And, you know, I think for me, anger fueled me. And I know that's not positive. Therapists would say that's not positive.
It's fuel. No, it's real fuel. Yes. These therapists are definitely not Latina women.
Yeah. I'm like, that was my superpower because I was like, no me voy a quedar aquí. You know, this is not why my parents came to this country, worked so hard. And I worked so hard to get my PhD to be stuck. So I kept on knocking on doors. And then when my daughter wasn't with me, she, you know, I saw that as it's free daycare. You know, she's with her dad or she's somewhere else and that's free daycare. So what do? I go to the coffee shop and I write and I focus on my craft. This is what I am trained for. This is where I received my degrees. So let me keep on knocking on doors and also connecting with people that, you know, might have the keys to the doors that are locked for you and they might show you a different path, right? Or opportunities. And that's ultimately how I ended up at ASU. Somebody heard my story, they were inspired and they actually wrote in a job application. They had my name on it. They had, we would like Emir Estrada for this position. And I got recruited to work at ASU and it's just been a blessing and I'm very grateful. Yeah.
I just remembered this conversation. We're going to have to make this a two-parter.
To learn more about the podcast, follow us on Instagram at FinSavvy in 20 Minutes and catch our interviews on YouTube. If you want to become a sponsor, hire us for your next workshop or speaking engagement, reach out to us at financiallysavvyin20minutes.com or send us a DM. All it takes is 20 minutes out of your day to become financially savvy.